now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, our very special guest is Sashita. Sashita has had a lifetime of experiences with reptilians, and she's also had military experiences, military encounters in the underground bases. She's also been utilized in time travel ops, in particular going into the future, which she will describe in this interview. Sashita provides a unique perspective. She has seen a lot of the reptilian culture. Many people report having encounters with reptilians, once in a while even being taken to an underground base that's populated and controlled by reptilians. But Sashita has had many such experiences of being taken into underground reptilian-controlled installations. So she has witnessed at first hand the reptilian culture and to some degree has developed an understanding of the reptilian scheme of things and the reptilian way of doing business. Her website is talltalesblog.wordpress.com. That's talltales, T-A-I-L-S, blog, all one word, .wordpress.com. And I'm really looking forward to this interview. So without any further ado, Sashita, how are you?
Thanks so much, James. Thanks for having me on. And I'm not from this country. I'm from New Zealand. I started having experiences that I recall when I was around 2.5, 3 years of age. Training exercises to keep me from being too attached to my body. So it was about learning to leave my body without fear or, you know, upset. So that, and I didn't know who they were, but I'd be going up, 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 and I'd be able to see the sky and the clouds. And then I'd become so distraught, and I'd race back into my body, and we'd just keep trying again and again until finally I was happy just to let it go, and then that would be the end of the session, and they'd be happy then. So it sort of started like that, and I always had someone with me, and I knew that, and I was always able to see wonderful things. I know my parents had quite horrific experiences. You know, like my mum would be lifted and spun around against the ceiling, and, you know, her hair would be turned into horns or something to terrify her and father, I suppose. But I never had horrible experiences like that. Mine were always nice. I always saw what I perceived to be lovely beings, and I knew I had an angel, and that's what I thought it was because I grew up as a Christian, okay? I'm not anymore. But, you know, that's how I was brought up, and so, you know, even going to sleep and things like that, if I couldn't sleep, I would ask him to, you know, just wave his wings over me so that I could feel the breeze and, you know, fall asleep. And so that's, I guess, you know, my younger years. And I never really thought anything of it because everything when you're a child is normal. Do you know what I mean, James?
Yes, absolutely.
You know, everything's normal. And I still perceive it that way, I suppose. I just recognize now that other people don't have those experiences necessarily. And to recognize that there was, you know, that it wasn't just a spiritual experience, that it was actually physical, but they were just of a different make or a different frequency from a different dimension, if you like. That kind of realization sort of only came a few years ago when I started to actually pay attention and ask a few pertinent questions. That came about just through putting it out to the universe, actually, and saying, I want to know the truth. I want to know what's really going on. I want to know how the universe works, and I want someone to show me. And I guess it came from loneliness, too, because like so many people that have experienced these things, I never felt like I came from here or belonged here. And it's such a lonely journey until you learn a few things about your origins, and then you don't care anymore because you realize you're only here for a short time and it'll be over soon. You know, it's not such a big deal. But, you know, up until that point, it was an incredibly lonely, lonely journey. And, you know, I spent many years in depression and had, you know, a lot of sadness and just, yeah, feelings of isolation and abandonment, you know. I don't have any of that now, and I'm quite happy. And I was lucky that, you know, I discovered the reptilians, if you like, because, you know, they taught me what that meant, what those feelings were and why I had them and how they could be removed and how I could have a wonderful and happy life. So I know that, you know, to a large extent, my experiences have been different, okay, to other people. I have had similar ones, however. I know that they're quite promiscuous and naughty and some of them are downright horrid. My experiences haven't been too horrid, mostly because I know how to handle them, you know, and I know how they think and I know their cues, I know their social cues, and you just get to know what to expect and, you know, how to barter with them and how to call their bluff, I guess. And so I've always been all right, you know.
When did the reptilians manifest themselves to you? When did it seem as if the experiences changed from kind of an angelic nature to having encounters with the reptilians, or was it one and the same? Perhaps the winged entity, the winged angel, may have been in league or a reptilian itself. Did you ever wonder about that?
Oh, yes, all the time. And, I mean, it's not something I concern myself with too much, mostly because it's not now. And it's been and gone. And my perceptions of that could be entirely distorted. It was so long ago that I don't believe in holding on to those things too much and trying to dissect them in the now. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you mean insofar as the angelic visitations and the comforting presence when you were a young girl?
Yeah, I'm unlikely to be able to come to a correct conclusion, if you like, or assessment of that because I was heavily in the Christian upbringing. It did feel wonderful. It still does, okay? Depending on who it is, of course, you know. And I always say it's just like the human species. They're not so different. You know, you've got your good ones and you've got your real asses. And unfortunately, as you know, it's only a small amount of the human population that I think are inherently good and aware and in the now, present, and really working to make a positive difference. And it's like that with that species too, you know. That everyone's just existing except for those that I guess, and it's not that they're better or they're more illuminated, it's, you know, they're just taking a different route, they're just taking a different path, and so I've been lucky in that I have met some of those, and they are very few, I've got to tell you, you know, but so I've been able to, you know, work with both sides of it, I guess, and see, I always had this thing, and I don't know if it was, you know, input externally, but I never wanted to see anything when I was younger. I didn't want to see anything scary. I refused to see anything. I'm not seeing dead people. I'm not seeing spirits. I'm not seeing anything. I was vehement about that. I don't care what my parents see. I refuse to see a damn thing. And I was like that right up into my late teens, early 20s, refused to see anything. And I'd have all sorts of things happen. And, you know, pretty intense stuff. You know, I'd be walking with someone outside and that person would be being dragged away from me by things they couldn't see and I'd be holding on to them to keep them with me. So, but I refused to see, you know, I'd be cleaning hotel rooms and lights would be turning off and on the radio and you could see it moving, you know, and it didn't frighten me so much. I mean, I was well aware that there were creatures around. I was more annoyed than anything and, you know, I'd give them a telling off and they'd leave me alone, but I refused to see, and I reached a point where I was willing to see, and I was willing to engage, and I made that known, and that's when it happened, and I walked into, you know, the room that I was staying in at the time, and he was sitting there and gave me my first instructions.
Could you describe what that encounter entailed? What did the being look like, and, you know, what was the conditions of the room, the lighting, etc.?
Yeah, sure. Looked like a humanoid style lizard and was sitting on the corner of my bed. I was staying in Sydney at the time. I'd lost my car license. I was sort of around the Lower Blue Mountains area the room, it was in a lodgings, so, but I had my own room and my own bathroom, but it was kind of like a, you know, like an ibis.
Yes.
Very basic.
Bare bones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but it wasn't an ibis, it was just a, you know, a lodgings building. And he just said to me that, you know, I had to turn the television off, and then that wasn't enough. He said I had to remove the aerial and talk to me a little bit about the where's and why fors of that and what was happening to me. The lighting was just normal. It was mid-afternoon. And, yeah, I just walked in and saw him there, and I thought, okay. And I just shut the door and waited for what he had to say, you know. I wasn't alarming or anything like that. It was just I was happy to have him there, I guess, you know. I didn't feel poorly about it anyway, and then when he started telling me a few things, I was glad to have him there, you know.
Was there a feeling of recognition? Like, did you feel that you'd sensed his presence in the past, but and perhaps you talked to him telepathically or something, and then finally you had the sense of recognition when you saw
him? Yeah, well, I was sure that someone had been following me around for about a week, and it was a sexual kind of thing, and I knew that the being was trying out different ways of interacting with me and unsure how to engage, and I kind of chased him, really, you know, because I don't know how many people do this, but basically, you know, you can find anyone once you know what their imprint is, and so it doesn't matter where they are in the countryside, you can find them, and I'm very good at that, so I know how to lock on to somebody, lock on to their
energetic signature.
Yes. Just like a radio station, do you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. I can find that person anywhere and communicate with them, and they'll think of me. They have to, and they'll often, you know, communicate with me, and then they'll feel silly afterward, you know, because they think that perhaps this can't be real. But so, and that's something that they do. And I guess they just weren't aware that I could do that. And so I just hounded them, really, and so, yeah, so I did that with him, and so when I walked in and saw him there, I wasn't surprised because I'd already made a telepathic deal, and I had said, you know, I'm willing to engage with you. I want to learn about the universe, and I'm willing to trade. And I believe that you require sexual energy as a form of sustenance. And I'm willing to give you that because I happen to know how to regenerate it, you know, like that, and tons of it. So it's not going to deplete me, you know. I understand how to be recharged from the universe, you know. So I put that out there basically, and that was the trade.
Now, the appearance that people convey as far as reptilians, it varies. Sometimes they're nude, if you will. Other times they may, you know, wear like a gown or a robe, or, you know, have a hooded cloak, that kind of thing. There was something interesting about that particular first encounter with this reptilian. Would you like to describe what he looked like?
Yeah, like I said, he just looked like a kind of humanoid-looking lizard. He was bare of garment, but he has, on occasion, worn things for my entertainment. He finds clothing entertaining, so I have...
Oh, okay, I got that mixed up. I thought that was the first time you met him. He was dressed like a human, but no, that was later, right?
Yeah.
Hey, could you describe what he appeared as, the kind of clothing he wore?
Yeah, like as a bit of a joke, sometimes he'll put on, you know, like a full-on breasted dinner suit, you know, like, I don't know, he finds it really entertaining, and there's been occasions where, you know, he would wear a cloak and he would put a hood on, and I don't understand the significance of that. Usually those were more sexual encounters, and this was like something very special for him, and so he would wear that. But if I was to paint him, I always had to put a loincloth on him if I painted him naked, though he'd never wear one. But that's what he would, you know, he liked me to portray. But, yeah, no, clothing was a bit of a joke to him. So that's, you know, every now and again he'd play dress-ups. So
he apparently was somewhat self-conscious of his appearance?
Yes, most definitely thought himself you know, horrifying to look at compared to the human form. He finds, you know, humans to be really beautiful looking, and particularly the females. And he was always really sensitive about that. And so it was really hard for me to, I always had to try and manage my emotions ever so carefully and any fear ever so carefully, because if he got just the slightest whiff of it, I wouldn't see him for quite some time, you know. And I, it was enjoyable company, and still is, if, you know, I want to have some company. He's really nice company, and he was always interesting to chat to and helpful and considerate. And, I mean, as time went on, he started to understand the nature of the human female and how to interact appropriately in a way that, you know, gave us both something fulfilling.
The encounters with this particular being, and did he give you a name that you could call him by?
Yes, he did. I'm not sure that I feel comfortable putting it out.
Oh, no, that's quite all right. You don't have to.
And it's certainly nothing that anyone would recognize. It's not of any languages that we have.
Yeah, that's what it is with a lot of these aliens, if you will, that their names are unpronounceable, basically, by human tongues and human ears. And in the Deep Black Weird Science projects, it's not unusual for the humans that interact with aliens to give them generic names like Joe or Steve, just because they can't wrap their tongues around the pronunciations. A lot of people describe encounters with reptilians, encounters that run the gamut, as far as sometimes they could be purely physical, sometimes they could be astral, sometimes they could be stage-managed dreams. Did you experience the same thing? Like, would he manifest himself in your dreams and then show you things and take you places?
100%, and some of it was physical too. The difficult part is that, you know, that we're quite dense. So moving me around isn't easy, you know, and it was really fatiguing and hard on my body. And I don't know how people will sort of receive this kind of thing, but they had to do a lot of stuff to my body to be able
to modify you.
Yeah, to be able to make it so that I could be in their physical space and see them and touch them in the way that you and I could see each other or touch each other. To have me to be able to pass through what we perceive as solid objects. So in order to be in his space and in his abode where he lives, I needed to be changed, one, to be able to get there in the first place, and two, to be able to stay there with him and see him with naked eyes, not just mind eyes. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes. Not with just your etheric third eye vision,
that's
if you will,
correct.
But your physical
that's
eyes.
That's correct. So, I mean, that was an exhilarating process and, you know, fun and exciting. And I went on heaps of trips to where he works, to the places that he manages and, you know, like I said, to his own sleeping quarters and things like that. And, I mean, that was a real honor for me. And I begged and begged and begged to go there, you know, like I, you know, because I felt safe with him. And, well, not, look, I felt comfortable with him. I didn't always feel safe, you know, and I don't think it's any different. I know my cats, sometimes if I'm playing with them, you can see sometimes they look at me and think, okay, maybe it's going to happen now. She's finally going to eat me. Do you know what I mean? So, and I think it's the same because they're naturally stronger, more powerful. They supersede us, so you see them as a predator. And in many ways, they are predatory toward us. And so it's only natural to have that kind of instinctive awareness.
You've been exposed to a lot of their culture. You've been taken to some of their installations. Would you describe these installations as, and it may have varied depending on the circumstances and the point in time, were some of them like physical installations and R3D but underground, or were some of the installations you were taken to were slightly out of phase of our dimension, like you mentioned the adjustment phase you had to go through?
Can you remind me of the adjustment?
Well, like you mentioned earlier, that they had to modify you in such a way so you'd be able to interact in their reality.
Okay, well, I mean, that was just a series of operations that, and sometimes I would wake up on the table and, you know, and they would show me things that they were taking out of my body. And there was a period of, you know, draining all the blood out of my body and filtering my blood and, you know, reinserting, you know, a blood liquid, I guess, still blood, but different, you know, and there's so much. It's such a big thing to say, and you realize that when you hear yourself say it out loud. But I mean, yeah, and I went to their underground installations, and yes, they're physical, you know, and there's people there, and a lot of young people too, you know, in their early 20s and late teens, or, you know, and they think they're dreaming. A lot of people don't understand their own dreams. They haven't spent time learning about their own dreams. And if that's one thing I can impress upon people, to really learn your own dreams and your own triggers and I'll think of the word in a second, but when you do that, when something foreign comes in, you're alerted.
The cue, you're aware.
Yeah, you're alerted, and you become aware that when there is alien, if you like, input. Okay.
Yes.
I suppose, you know, because they didn't know, they would be there, so they'd wake up and I'd wake them up, and they would just think that they were dreaming, and so they'd go back to sleep, and, you know, I'd be desperate to wake them up, and there's not much you can do, unfortunately, because people out there just aren't aware of what goes on. But most of these people, you know, I guess would be found in their bed of a heart attack or something, or would just disappear. There was, I recognized a lot of, you know, sort of organ removal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I guess for me it was, I was being taken on a tour, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, and I watched him, you know, do some of these things, and I recognized the area where it was. I know the security guard, I mean, you know, and I recognized, you know, the country trains that go out there and stop and drop off supplies. I mean, you know, it was pretty full on. And to come back to this afterward.
Yeah, that, I imagine that one would have to take stock of the situation that, my goodness, all this is going on right under everyone's noses. These people are there in these facilities completely oblivious to what's going on because they think they're having a dream. If they remember anything at all, it'll be like a fragmented dream, a fragmented memory. Now, when you mentioned the trains on the surface, did you imply that those are trains on the surface?
Yeah.
Or were they? Okay. And was that trains that were being operated by humans?
Yeah.
Or perhaps by, okay.
So from what I could tell, it was just like our regular freight locos, and they'd be taking freight out, and, you know, they'd be made to stop at a signal or something, and, you know, to this day they probably don't know why they often have to stop at that signal, and they're just being told that there's another train ahead of them, you know, and while they're waiting there for the so-called train ahead of them to be moved on, you know, supplies are being removed from their carriages. So that was what I witnessed, in any case.
And eventually these supplies, provisions, et cetera, would make their way down into the underground facility.
Well, up, actually. The train goes through a type of gully, and see, it's much easier to dig straight rather than down.
Oh,
so
yes,
that they find, like, a large ridge line, you know, and then they can just dig straight into it, and the facility will be up in there, you know. And because humans don't usually look up. So trains going through a place like that, no one on the train's really going to look up and pay attention to anything. They all kind of look straight out or down, you know.
So one can infer, perhaps, that the reptilians have somehow either suborned or somehow manipulated things on the surface to make this kind of logistical operation happen. Did you see anyone in the underground reptilian bases that looked like human or human military or human officials or maybe reptilians in the guise of humans?
I have seen that in other locations, but not at that particular facility. It was sort of run by other creatures that were hybrid forms of creatures developed by humans. In other facilities or locations, meeting locations, yes, I have seen reptilians present themselves as humans to other reptilians to, you know, maintain a secret identity from their own people.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's quite a common practice, especially, you know, when they're in, you know, positions of, you know, high power, and that's quite common. But, yeah, no, look, there are Some of it seems military. A lot of it doesn't, however. A lot of it seems standalone, contractor-based type facilities, okay? They don't have a particular uniform. Do you know what I mean? They don't.
Yes.
You know? So, you know, it's hard to say who they are or who they're funded by. And I mean, I know who that one's funded by, and it's, you know, it's not human. But that's not to say that others aren't funded by humans or owned by humans, you know. I mean,
yeah.
Unlikely, though. I think more than anything, the humans are kind of just a face, really, you know, and to an operation, and they themselves don't know how deep their own hole goes.
Now, when they did these medical procedures on you, was it reptilians, medical practitioners themselves, or was it some other race that they had gotten to do that medical
work? It was
work
another race.
On
it
you?
Was, and they even had like a medical-looking ship. It was white with blue and that around the outside, and kind of like a triangular-looking ship. And they took me up there to do it. I was escorted by a human who I absolutely detest. I can't stand this woman. I don't know who she is. She's got kind of like hair down to her shoulder, and it's kind of fuzzy brown and blonde, and she's slightly overweight, I guess. And anyway, I got no time for it all. I remember coming back, and she was taking me back to my bed after the operation. She's walking me to my bed, and I just remember looking at her and saying, "You know, you're my favorite, eh? You know that, don't you?" I just can't stand it. I think it's more a case of complete disrespect on my part, because I see her as a kind of mole and not a pushover, but just a, she kind of just does whatever they say, and just a total sellout, you know?
Yeah, so you get the impression that she is a human working for them, consciously perhaps working for them,
yeah,
or maybe even shunted into an... You didn't get the impression she was under mind control, she was doing this willingly?
Yeah, she's doing it willingly. She's, I mean, obviously there's always some manipulation involved, but the guys that were operating on me were, they were grey in colour and looked like the kind of aliens you would expect to see, you know, the normal alien suit, but with the kind of big eyes and the bald cone heads. And, you know, those are the ones that kind of do the operations, I guess. I don't know what they are. I've never really gotten into jumping to conclusion that they're greys and they're reptilians and they're this and they're that. I think it's always dangerous when you become too certain about anything, you know.
Yes, and there's enough of that going on in the so-called UFO buffoonery.
Well, he said to me, always remember, certainty kills. And
yes. I never assume anything. When I'm in an experience and I have some degree of conscious awareness, I don't take anything I see or feel or the impressions I receive at face value.
So I'm always very careful about that. And I mean, you know a rip when you get to know them, I guess, and you can see who's, you know, a half-caste or faking it. But those are the ones that, you know, do the operations and that. Reptilians, they're not very patient like that. They're not good at doing the procedures, you know. They just kind of cut and hack and do things quickly. So if the body's unimportant and they're not wanting to keep it, then yes, they'll do a procedure. But
yeah. And so basically they'll do that kind of procedure on, say, a cadaver or something.
Or something that's about to become a cadaver, yeah.
Or something that's about to become a cadaver. Now, give us an impression about the depth and the scale of some of these facilities. I take it you've been to more than one of them. Does it seem like some of these facilities are basically geared up to do particular kind of work, particular kind of things go on in certain facilities? And what's the layout of some
Look,
of these places
if
like?
You're looking at the more contractor version type, I mean, you go inside a mountain somewhere and there's, you know, a minimum 5 floors that you're going down,
okay,
you know, and they got elevators and they got beautiful, I mean, they're stunning facilities and very comfortable, and because what they do is it's not just a facility, it's never just a facility. This is a home, an office, a play area, you know, and a work area all in one. So these guys are working from home. Do you know what I mean?
Yes,
yeah, that's,
absolutely.
You know, been my impression. And it's kitted out beautifully, you know, for any species that's residing there. And if it's not kitted out for humans by any means, but if you do visit there, they will go to great pains to make it comfortable in a way that, you know, would be pleasing to you.
By that, I guess you mean that the architecture would not, at first blush, seem to be something that humans would make.
It would, and it's not like it's really fancy. I mean, these guys understand the inside of the earth, it would seem. Okay, so you've got the reason it's so stunning is it's just rock. I mean, it's hewn out of the earth.
Oh, so they take advantage of the natural cavern formation.
So you've got all of that, but then in amongst that you'll have this beautiful stainless steel-looking stuff and glass and waterfalls that they've created inside. And, I mean, it's this mix of this natural and yet, I mean, it really is quite stunning, and things look gold-plated and, you know, like, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Now, could you give us an example of the kind of technological capabilities you've seen the reptilians manifest that, you know, what kind of, like, machinery, equipment they have, the scale of it? Do they have handheld devices? Or is everything basically manifested through thought and through use of energy?
Now, there's a lot of physical stuff there. I mean, but I've got to be careful, I guess, when I say that, because I had to be changed to be able to view it in that kind of way, if that makes sense. So how physical it really is, I'm unable to be honest. Like, not honest. I'm able to be honest, but I'm not able to answer that straight. I don't know how physical it really is. I just know that I was able to pass through things. I was able to pass through my own bed to get back here, my own ceiling. I'm able to, you know, and coming back. But in any case, you know, the people that were there were whole. And I mean, everything's, all I do remember is that those spider-like creatures, well, they weren't spiders. I mean, they had two arms and two legs, but they were able to, you know, climb around all the cavernous walls, and they kind of moved like a spider or a crab, you know.
Sideways and whatnot.
Yeah,
and
just cling to walls. I mean, but I was well aware that in theory I wasn't supposed to be able to see them. Humans couldn't see them. The only reason I could see them is because of the waterfall. And this water fell like glass. It was so clear and reflective, and that is how I was able to see these creatures, the reflection of them. Yeah, so I don't know why I couldn't see them, whether they were projecting that to me or my eyes just can't see that kind of thing, but I saw their reflection, and once I saw where they were positioned, I made to look directly at them and told them I could see them even though I couldn't. Of course, they were mortified. They still to this day believe that I could see them. It's like a, you know, some kind of folk legend in the facility that there was a human out there that could see them, but really I couldn't. I just pretended that I could see them because I could see the reflection. But I mean, as for technology and things like that, I mean, a lot of it's pretty base. I mean, the things that you would expect to see, cutting implements, tables and things like that, and things that I couldn't hope to be able to explain, these, you know, mid-air kind of screens that they have, and you know how they have the touch screens in the movies and things like that. But, you know, there, I mean, the flick of their eye was moving, this kind of stuff. They weren't having to touch it.
I've had reptilians show up in my home. Where did this happen at? In San Diego, one of my homes there, where they showed up, and in my living room, they manifested this, what I called a holographic screen. And they showed me this scenery, and I guess they were plugging into my memories, what I research, what I like to read as a pastime, because what they did was they showed me what I perceived to be a nighttime battle in the American Civil War. And, you know, I haven't come across too many accounts of, you know, set-piece nighttime battles in the Civil War. I'm sure that there was, you know, times when opposing forces ran into each other and they had a skirmish or whatever. But what happened was, as I'm watching this, I got pulled into the screen, and I found myself in what looked like the woods somewhere. And I remember all these cannonballs and shells landing in the woods and the ground shaking and the loud explosions. And I could hear also and feel the dried leaves crunching beneath my shoes, and or my bare feet, rather. And I remember saying to myself, you know, it was one of those things where you don't take things at face value. I always say to myself, I cannot assume this is just an illusion or this is just a dream or whatever. I'm going to, like, avoid getting shot and blown up by a shell. You know what I mean? So I was running through the woods in a panic. And there were other instances when they kind of pulled me into these screens and suddenly I find myself in a certain kind of a scenario. So I have an idea of the screens that you're talking about. May not be the exact same thing you describe, but somewhat similar, I would reckon. Now, how many different types of entities in general? You saw the gray-looking beings that were conducting a lot of the medical experiments or medical work, and then you describe the spider-type beings. Did you mention to me before that you felt that some of these spider-like humanoid beings had some role in the abductions themselves? Do you feel that they actually take part in the abductions?
What they would do was, so a human would be, you'd teleported everywhere, okay? So they'd be teleported from their home into the facility, into a waiting area, and then these creatures from that point would then take over whatever had to be done with you. They would then transport you within the facility and do everything that was required. Okay, so they were just an experiment themselves, and of course, you know, like so many experiments, they're utilized for some kind of job capacity, much as we probably were when we were created. But so that would be their job. They'd come and get the human, take the human in and cut them up or do whatever had to be done. But they're the ones that they're able to sort of just point at you and just twist their hand a little and electrocute your heart, you know, and stop it. So. Yeah, you know.
Really?
And they tried to do that to me, of course, because of the altercation that we had. But, I mean, I was lucky, you know, I had him in there. And even though he, you know, runs that facility and that they, no one knows of his existence and nor can they see him. So he was kind of just like a black ripple in the air and I was very quickly removed.
Oh, in other words, the other beings that were in this facility, I suppose most or all of them have a certain task to perform, and they're in there doing what they're meant to do. He was kind of like an overseer.
That's
which
right.
They couldn't
see. And I'll say I can call him Sal. I just won't say his full name. But so Sal, you know, finances, operates, owns that facility. They just don't know of his existence.
They just know that somewhere high up in the pecking order, there is someone that they're receiving orders
so
from.
But it'll only be their immediate superior. Do you know what I'm saying? So they don't know any more than that.
Yeah.
It's just like for any company that you think you work for, you think you know the owner and you think you know the managers, and those people are all portrayed and displayed to you.
So you saw the gray-looking beings doing the medical experimentation. You saw the spider humanoids that play a role in the abductions and move people around the facilities. Any other kinds of entities you've seen in some of these facilities?
In other facilities, it's just humans, you know. So you have the semi-military style. I mean, some of these people are really horrible. Like, they're really horrible people, like completely cold and disrespectful. I mean, obviously these sorts of humans must exist. They're just, you know, it's really hard to explain, James. I mean, you know, to think that, I don't know, they're just the way they sort of handle you. And I mean, most of them were too scared of me anyway because, of course, I do hang out with reptilians and they're absolutely petrified. I mean, they're petrified of these reps, you know, and so they handle me very carefully. But they're very cold and very guarded, you know, as people go, and unpleasant, just entirely unpleasant. And, you know, they only know their job, and they see it as their job and do or die, you know. They've got to do it. That's all they really care about is doing that one small thing that they do. And if that's just putting you to sleep, then hell or high water, that's what they're going to do, you know.
Yeah. Do you get the impression that some of them don't want to be there, that they're kind of fearful of their surroundings?
I never once got that, and that's a really interesting question. I never once got that. Most of them were kind of arrogant and proud.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Like they felt special and privileged to be involved in.
Which I thought was quite ridiculous, really, you know. I mean,
considering how low on the totem pole they are and how much they're regarded as chattel by some of the reptilians. That's interesting. So in some of these facilities, there would be a lot of humans that seem to be working there that help process and
so
move abductees around
talking
and,
about,
and do
no,
things
they
theoretically.
They don't have humans there working. But in other facilities that I've been taken to for testing and things like that, when I had to do jobs, remember when the big guy that disguised himself as a human, he saw me taking part in the meeting through, you know, Sal's mind. It was a telepathic viewing. We had to barter for my continued existence. Once I started doing those jobs where I was traveling forward and back in time and undertaking, you know, jobs, house painting, if you like, then in those facilities, yes, there were a lot of humans and it was more militarized and they were more sadistic. I have to say that wherever there's humans involved, and I know everyone likes to say that, you know, reps are sadists and they're the ones that are doing all this nasty stuff, but in any reptilian facility I've been in, it's very cut and dry. They bring humans in, cut them up, kill them, move on. That's it. They're not playing games, okay? They're playing games when they go into people's homes and they want to play sex games. But when it comes to these facilities, it's very cut and dried. But you go to a human-run facility, I mean, they're sadistic. They're really warped, hey?
Yeah.
I'm telling you, like in my experience, this is, you know, unlike anything I've ever known. And I mean, you see it now in wartime. Remember that woman, you know, she had all those bodies or something on top of each other, naked bodies? Was she making all these soldiers?
Yeah, that was Abu Ghraib. That was
sadistic
woman.
Most of them are like this, actually. And from what I've seen, you know, and I've only come across one kind soldier, okay, who knew what I was, knew who I worked with. And you know, but he was kind to me and came in and told me not to take the pills that they'd given me to take, and basically got my escape from that human run facility. But the others, you know, so long as they think that you're one of them, you know, a key soldier, you know, like a super soldier, they're nice to you, but they'll shoot you in a heartbeat too. And the moment they think that you're not that, I mean, these guys, they're nasty and there's something wrong with them in the head, I'm telling you.
So in other words, if they think that you're just another abductee, they will just treat you like dirt and chattel. But if they have there been times when you found yourself
I've never been in a military uniform. I was always kept separate, and that's because I was working for someone else. So I was a buy-in, okay, as part of the deal. Because I could do things, and you know, and I'm under the wing, a physical wing as well as a metaphorical one, you know, of someone who's pretty key, you know, yeah.
And that
so
would be
I'm
Sal.
Just fortunate in that respect,
yeah.
But they can't touch me, and they're terrified of me on my own account because I have been so violent, but also because of, you know, because of the consequences of what they may do. Just like, I don't know how to explain it, you know how some people play with animals and they're terrible and they think they're just playing and they're swinging it by the tail or whatever they're doing, you know, but when it comes to being, the female reptilians are quite sadistic and they got some serious issues, I've got to say, and they're the ones that people, I think, mostly have trouble with sexually, But, when it comes to these facilities, James, humans are just atrocious, and I don't have words to explain or express their atrocities and their cruel, divided, twisted nature. I mean, they've become so full of ego and power, like they think they're gods, and they just, I don't know if they become like that to cope with what they're doing or why, but, yeah, it's horrific in any case. Sorry, go on.
Oh, yeah, well, I feel that, I don't know what your thoughts on this, but I feel at least some of those people are entity-infested anyway, that a lot of them fall into this hybridized category where they may have some entity or entities working through them, so they may not have the kind of normal range of human emotions of joy, of laughter, of compassion, et cetera, et cetera. Now, you mentioned something a moment ago which is key to your story, there was some resentment on the part of the humans, it seems, but also on the part of some of the reptilians about what they may have perceived as your special status, because you came under the protection of Sal. It was kind of like, you know, in, you know, probably an onerous, you know, comparison, but like in mafia terms on the surface, if someone is made a made man, then you, no matter how much this person pisses you off or disrupts your operations, you just can't take action against him without authorization from and some kind of concordat, if you will, amongst the families. Did you notice something along those lines where you felt frustration from some reptilian elements because they may have wanted to treat you differently, but because of your protection from Sal, they couldn't do that?
Look, I felt that from humans, not from reptilians, I got to say. Yeah.
Okay.
The reptilians kind of mock the concept a little bit, but, you know, as you get to know them, and so long as you can communicate with them and do some of the things that they can do, and they will develop respect for you, you know. They have a deep respect for fearlessness and, you know, standing by your own set of values regardless, and being able to play the game, and I will explain the game. But the humans were the ones that had the problem, because all humans like to be made to feel special, and if they perceive someone's more special than them, then they develop an issue. And it wasn't that I ever acted out, I didn't. It's just that they had to perform certain tasks on me, and if I didn't always understand what was going on, I would ask questions and they wouldn't answer, and therein would lie the problem. And then that would have to be sorted out. Things needed to be explained. Otherwise, I wasn't having any part of anything, you see. So, and that was only because I had to do these jobs, and, you know, that was an agreement, but I wasn't allowed to be harmed. And a lot of these people are really angry, you know, and they just want someone to beat up and act out on, and, yeah, and,
take,
you know, that wasn't allowable where I was concerned, and I could be incredibly strong and violent if I had to be, and they never knew. They could never read me, I suppose, and if they didn't know that was about to happen, because I would tolerate their behavior to an extent, but if it went too far, then I would obviously snap, but they wouldn't know that that was coming, you see. So it was always a lot of tension. There's always a lot of tension there. You know, but I did have to work with humans on these jobs and, you know, other people that were tasked to do certain things, and they were always all right to work with. It's those ones in those facilities that were the problem, you know.
Could you give us an idea of what some of the tasks you were required to perform as part of this deal?
You're looking at, you know, house painting, rubbish removal, you know, if you can read into that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing it
definitely
ahead in time to eliminate that rubbish from the now. You know, they don't tend to go back in time to do eliminations. They tend to go forward in time. I mean, yeah, they were quite extensive. You know, it's all, a lot of it's political. And
who would be doing the taskings usually, the humans or the reptilians?
A bit of both. But none of the people from facilities, this was all political. It's to get people to know the truth. So what people talk about, the Illuminati and things like that, the reptilians that I was working with, our main aim was to let the world know that this stuff is going on and to try and get a change in presidency in America. So and to have some of the behaviors in that leaked out throughout that course. So I think I told you about the time where I had to give the president wasn't available and I had to give a speech. Now, basically what they have actors, okay, that would be brought in with some fake title, okay, and I would have a fake title and I would give a public address on camera. Now, this was done in the future, okay, how can I explain this? So say we go 25 years into the future, I do a public address, and all I said was, you're dealing with terrorists. I know we've had a lot of trouble with terrorists. There's a lot of talk about terrorists at the moment, but I just want you to know that it's us. We are the terrorists, and all hell breaks loose. Now, what happens is that when you say that in the future, then it's like a reverse domino. It's a reverse domino back in time to the now.
Yes.
We have a major change in presidency and awareness, okay? And that's what we were doing. But we had to make some eliminations before an address like that was even possible, okay? So that's what we were doing, and this all happened early last year, end of the year before. That's what I was doing, and that's what these jobs were. And I know people have a lot of nasty stuff to say about reptilians, and they think reptilians are, doing all the bad shit there, but what we did there was good. And unfortunately, you know, everyone just gets lumped into one big bag.
Now, these humans that you've run across, I've heard reports from the UK, for example, and from South America, where when someone is taken to these underground facilities that are UFO ET related, and these reports may come from civilians or they may come from military people, from the host government up on the surface.
I like
let's
that
say.
Host government.
It
that's
seems
actually,
that
yeah, that's what it is.
That's quite apt. It is. It seems that there are a lot of Americans in these facilities. Did you notice an American presence in these facilities, or were they all Australians?
I've got to be honest and say that they were all very careful not to speak so that you didn't know. But I always thought they were American. And others that I've dealt with underground and very heavily militarized facilities, they were American, and we were talking to each other. But when you go into the more medical medical/military facilities, they're not allowed to talk to you.
You would be teleported from one facility to another, or were there times you were taken in a craft, taken in a high speed?
Transporting you between facilities, and that often it would be in some kind of vehicle and you wouldn't necessarily know what it was. Being in a flying craft or just like a helicopter at its most mundane. And I've been brought back home in a helicopter a few times.
We've reached the end of the first hour. If you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to our website, thecosmicswitchboard.com, and subscribe and become a member. We're just getting started, so Sheeta has a lot more to share with us